Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to another edition of program Dare to Be Different. Just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, well, it's via the audio streaming Medium Wave 1548 Satellite Islam, and to those of you that are listening to us on the DSTV on 826, and just a wonderful, wonderful week we've had. Brilliant weather again, and perhaps the extremes. We've had the cold, and suddenly the cold snap came in, and we've had now brilliant weather. In fact, the other extreme, in some cases, people are saying it's extremely hot and unseasonably very, very hot for this time of the year. And this morning we've got a wonderful guest with us, and we haven't spoken to someone from Waterwise for a long, long time. And we're going to be chatting to Megan, who's online with us this morning. Hi, good morning, Megan.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you very much. And before we go any further, tell us something about the work that you do, Megan.
Well, I run the Waterwise section here at Rand Water. We are responsible for education and awareness to adults on water conservation and other environmental principles as well.
Thank you very much, and I know you do a sterling job. People go out and educate and inform people. Now, when we look at the weather, one of the things that we always talk about is weather patterns, and we look at what's happening not just in South Africa but around the world, and we find that weather patterns are hard to predict, and we find that sometimes it has catastrophic consequences. For example, we have the hurricanes out in the Bahamas, and we've had them now heading towards America. Here in South Africa, we've had our own share of some of the challenges with our weather. We've had the extremities. Last year, we went through the drought, and it's early in the season, and we seem to have extreme weathers again. What's your take on that?
Well, we all know that we are facing climate change. And climate change, there's various models that predict the El Ninos and the La Ninos. But in general, we are seeing that there are going to be wetter wet periods and drier dry periods. And that comes with variability in rainfall patterns as well. So for South Africa in particular, South Africa's climate is predicted to increase on the whole. And in the western parts of the country, we are expecting more dry conditions, which will then impact on our agriculture. And there are some predictions that link specifically to that, that could change agricultural patterns there. And within the eastern parts of the country, there's a prediction for longer drought spells. So I think, yeah, it's happening, and we are experiencing the more extreme erratic conditions within our weather.
And, South Africa is a water-stressed country. We do have, it's not that we have abundance of rain. And some of the research coming saying that, desertification is taking place at a rapid pace, I beg your pardon. And certain areas are becoming more and more desert-like. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, that's all linked to the increase in temperature. And then with that, landscapes change, plant choice changes, environments, microclimates, everything starts to change with that. So that's why we're seeing the move towards that.
And when you talk about that, nature sometimes has a way of compensating for that, and coming up, and some plants become stronger and others die out, and those that become stronger are able to withstand these conditions. And we've seen that going over that cycle. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Now when we talk about, Waterwise, first thing that comes to our mind is, what is Waterwise? Why is it important to have Waterwise? And take us through some of those steps and process about Waterwise.
Well, Waterwise is in essence how you can save water within your daily living. So within Waterwise, we have six basic principles that we talk to, which is don't waste water, respect life, take environmental action, conserve water, conserve the environment, pay for your water services, don't litter. So these are all elements that contribute to looking after water within our environment, and if we do all of these things, we will conserve water and we will conserve our environment holistically.
Now, when you mentioned the six principles, and that two sort of prominent features of that, and they seem to be intertwined, is water and environment. Why is that so?
Well, water is linked to everything that we do. It's linked to our lives. It's linked to our daily existence. Most of our bodies, up to 70%, is made up of water. If you look at the earth as a whole, the majority of the earth is made of water. 30% is landmass, the balance is water. Yes, granted, most of it is in the sea. If you look at that water mass, 97% is salt water, is in the seas, so we can't drink it necessarily. 2% of the remaining water is frozen in the polar ice caps. And if you think of an ice cube, you can't just necessarily drink an ice cube. So only 1%, in fact less than 1%, is available for us as fresh water to consume.
And when we talk about it, we're talking about the whole planet having to use that 1%, you know. So
yes,
it's just one continent or one area of the world. It's the whole continent.
Exactly.
So it's all the billions of people that are here together collectively.
Yes, exactly. This is why we need to make sure that we look after our water resources that are currently available.
Now, what sort of education do we take, you know, whilst we're talking about, you know, water, pay for the water, check for the environment, make sure you don't return, all of those. How do we make sure that we get that message across to everyone to understand the importance? Because we go through two spells. We have the very dry spell and the very wet spell. And when the very wet spell comes, we forget all the lessons we've learned during the very dry spell. And when the dry spell comes in, then we're looking and we're running helter-skelter. Now, what can we do? How should we do it? Forgetting what we've learned and perhaps looking at what we have done that was incorrect and that we shouldn't have done.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's human nature. You know, we seem to take the things that we have around us for granted up until a stage where it's no longer so readily available. And this is what we saw exactly with the droughts that happened last year. Only once that was underway and we realized there's going to be water restrictions implemented did we actually start taking action to start conserving water. But our campaign, we ran it all year through, and we try various means to constantly engage with community groups, to constantly engage with school groups, to constantly engage with the public to make sure that they conserve water in various activities that they do.
Now, before we go on to, you know, the gardening side of and you know, the plant side of water-wise, tell us about some of the things that you normally do to educate and, you know, bring to the fore when talking to the public.
For us, as an adult education team, we engage with the public through our advertorials, and we place a range of advertorials in a range of magazines. We also produce exhibitions at various events throughout the year, and this gives us an opportunity to actually meet with the public, to engage with them, to show them practical methods of saving water either in their home or in their gardens. And we can then communicate with them one-on-one. We go out and we communicate with various community groups. This is usually on an ad hoc request. We come out and we talk about what are the problems that they are experiencing, how can they then help to save water within their building, within their surrounding space, within their gardens, and within their landscapes. So we try our best to engage with people as much as what we can.
Now, you know, we're just entering into this, well, I don't know, sometimes we're already into spring, sometimes we're just about entering, the spring, and we already find that there's, you know, this extremities of weather. What sort of education are you embarking on this time?
Sorry, can you say that again?
I said, you know, that we're now entering into spring, or some people say it's already spring, and we have this extremities of weather. We've had temperatures up to 30 in the last couple of days. What sort of, advice are you giving to people as we're going on? Are there any particular programs that you're rolling out?
Not particular programs. Like I say, our campaign runs year-long. So our message is still much the same. Irrespective of the weather, we need to still conserve water. We need to make sure that we're looking after the water resources that are available to us. We have recently worked with an industrial theatre team that helps us to go around to different community groups and show practical methods. Don't just tell me to save water, tell me how to save water. And with this industrial theatre group, they actually show ways of how you save water in the garden, how you save water in your home, how you can fix leaks. It's a nice practical way of showing that to various groups.
And if you could, you know, what would you share with our listeners? How could you, you know, sort of, let's unpack some of those things that we could do for our listeners. Let's look at, first of all, in the home, what are some of the tips that you'd give to people for conservation of water?
Well, one of the biggest issues within the domestic environment is that people often have leaks that go undetected. So a lot of our awareness these days is focused on understanding how much water is used in your home. Are you aware of your water meter? Do you know where it is located? Do you know how to read your water meter? Does your water meter correlate with the water meter reading on your water bill that you receive every month? Are you aware of that volume of water that you are using every month? And once you are aware, you can start working on methods to start reducing your water use within the home. Particularly, toilets are a number one contributor to water use. A lot of toilets are leaking, and in actual fact, it's just a replacement of a washer that can help you then stop that leak and save all of that water. People also need to be aware of the size of the system within their toilet system. What size do they have? Can they convert their toilet, if they've got an older toilet, to a dual flush toilet? Because a dual flush mechanism allows for a small flush of up to 4 liters and a large flush of up to 9 liters. Whereas the older systems use 12 liters per flush. And if you think of flushing, every time you flush the toilet, you use 12 liters of water. How many times do you go to the toilet in a day? It's quite a bit of water that then is consumed. So if we can start education around fixing leaks, adjusting your toilet systems without having to replace the entire toilet, you know there are mechanisms for this. They are available at hardware stores. So to create that type of awareness. And then, of course, being aware of your water meter, being aware of your water bill, understanding how much water you're using, and then learning to control it.
And so that's in the environment, or, you know, the home environment. Now, you know, you've sort of highlighted, sort of, I don't know if they would call it culprits, but the biggest guzzlers of water has been leaks in the toilets. Has there been any other ones that you could sort of highlight for our listeners so that we could, you know, also make them aware of what they should be looking out and how to conserve the water?
Sure. Well, leaks is not just specific to the toilets. It's in general. So if you've got a leaking tap within your home, also leaking taps are quite easy to fix in terms of fitting a washer onto them, and that is quite an inexpensive exercise. And if you think of the volumes of water saved to do that, that can also help. In terms of bathing and showering, if you bath, how much water do you fill up into the bath? Is it a full bath? Is it a half bath? Ideally, we try to encourage half baths. For those that are showering, do you take short showers? We say 5-minute showers, but I see in the Cape where the water restrictions are quite high, that they are encouraging 2-minute showers. So we need to just be cognizant of how much water we're using. And in between your showering, when you are lathering up, do you switch the water off? You just need the water to run over you to rinse your body, you know? So there's those types of considerations that you can make when you are showering to help conserve water. Then linked to that, you could also recycle your water or reuse your water, and that talks to grey water use. And there's different types of water that we use that is suitable as grey water, and that water can then be used in your garden. So in that way, you taking the water used from your hand basin and your shower, and you're using it in your garden, and you're putting less into the system. You're requiring less potable water being used on your garden and on your lawn.
And, you know, when we come now, what about the kitchen? How big a culprit is water in the kitchen, you know, when cooking and so forth? Is that a big concern?
Generally, water in the kitchen is not too big a user, because we need water to cook, and it has to be potable water. So as long as you're not wasting that water, that shouldn't be a problem. Look, when you are rinsing your veggies and things like that, it's encouraged that you collect the water underneath, and you can use that for something else. Also, if you are waiting for your hot water to run, also to collect that water while the water is warming up, to collect that water and reuse it. So there's options for reuse within the kitchen.
So when you look at the WaterWise initiative, it's a holistic one, looking at different aspects of water and its conservation and uses. Now, when we take it into our context with regards to gardening, I'm sure there's lots that you can share with us. What are the biggest watch points where water is being wasted in the garden?
Okay, so when you're talking about a garden, also if you're talking about water wastage, you need to look at leaks. Leaks is the number one waster of water, if I can call it that, because it's clean drinking water that is being wasted. It's not going anywhere, it's just running. So any form of leak, whether it's in the house or outside, you need to check, particularly if you're using a hose pipe. You know, check that your hose pipe isn't leaking. If you're using an irrigation system, check that your irrigation system isn't leaking. If you have an irrigation system, what is it irrigating? Is it spraying onto your paving? Is it spraying onto your driveway? Because those are areas that don't need to be watered, so don't waste water in that way. So eliminate the water wasters would be my first tip. And then when you're looking at your garden, you need to hydro zone. This is a big message that we are trying to push to encourage water savings within gardens. Hydro zoning just means grouping plants according to their water needs. So arranging your garden so that all the low water usage plants are grouped together. All the high water usage plants are grouped together. In that way, when you start watering your garden, you are watering according to the water needs. So the high water usage area, you'll water for a little bit longer, you'll apply a little bit more water, but all of those plants are getting watered sufficiently. In the low water usage area, you'll water less, and all of the plants will be watered sufficiently. If you have a mixture of high water usage plants and low water usage plants together in a bed, you are going to water that bed according to the high water needs. And then the low water needs plants in that bed will be overwatered, and then in that way you are wasting water. So by encouraging grouping of plants into their different hydro zones, into their different categories, you are encouraging water saving within the garden.
Thank you very much. We're going to go for a break. When we come back, we'll continue with this conversation. It's fascinating to know how that it's not just one aspect when you look at water-wise, a number of things. So we'll be chatting to you in a couple of minutes. Thanks.
Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. If you just joined in, it's Dare to be Different, and my name is Ismail Priya. We've got a wonderful guest this morning with us, Megan Donnelly from WaterWise, and she's taken us through some of the aspects that are covered by WaterWise. We're not just talking about WaterWise in the garden, we're talking WaterWise in the home and water wastage as well. And you'd like to join our conversation this morning, the number to dial 854-1548. We can take on any queries or questions that you have for Megan. Now, Megan, thank you very much for being with us. Tell us something about starting out a water-wise garden. We know we spoke about zoning, but are there any other principles that we could have, that we could apply when setting up a garden?
Yes. So, in fact, Rand Water, together with Sally, have launched a booklet called A Guide to Water-Wise Landscaping. And while this talks to landscapes, it can also be applied in the domestic environment, to your home, to your garden. And there's 8 basic steps that we outline in there that are important when you are planning a landscape. The first one is to plan and design. And that means look at the area that you are wanting to either revamp or start with. Look at your garden. Plan it properly. Decide what you want to put where. If you've got a windy area, are you putting windbreaks in place? Are you putting trees to break the wind? If you're wanting to start a vegetable garden, have you got a spot that has got at least 6 hours of sunlight to make sure that your veggies grow sufficiently? So plan. If you are wanting to put containers anywhere within your garden, decide where you're wanting to put them. Look at your soil. Do you have sufficient nutrient-rich soil to grow the types of plants that you are wanting to grow? So the first step is plan and design your garden. The second step, which we've already spoken about, is hydro zoning, which is grouping plants according to their water needs. Ideally, you want the low drop zone to be the biggest part of your garden so that your garden uses the least amount of water. So if you've got a low drop zone or a one drop zone with one drop plants in it, you know that that will be using very little water, and that if that is the majority of your garden, then on the whole, your garden will be using a little bit of water. A two-drop zone can be bigger, and then the three-drop zone, which is your high water usage zone, that should be the smallest part of your garden. So making sure that you allocate the zones in your garden accordingly so that it uses on the whole the least amount of water.
Sorry to just interrupt. Just take us through. I've noticed this one drop, two drop, three drops. When you go into garden centers, you have plants that have that as an indicator. Tell us something about that.
Yes. So, water-wise, together with the South African Nursery Association, are working together to try and educate customers on what is a one drop, two drop, and three drop plant. So, like I said, we've got three zones: low, medium, and high water use. And we've got plants to fit into those zones accordingly. So a one-drop plant would go into a low water usage zone. So those are types of plants that will use the least amount of water. Two-drop plants will go into the medium zone, and those plants use a little bit more water. Three-drop plants will use the most water, and those will go into your high water usage zones. And ideally, you want those zones to be your areas that are full of color, that you create focal points with at your entrances, and those can be in containers, in smaller sections of your garden.
Okay, so you've got the one drop, the two drop, and three drop. It's not indicative of the amount of water. It just says it would use lower amounts of water as opposed to, you would take, for example, the one drop and the three drop. The lower one would use, one drop would use less water, and the three drop would use more water.
Yes, so we do have guidelines in terms of how much water those plants would need, but you must also remember that that would be very much determined by where the plant is found, because you could have an arum lily in Gauteng and you could have an arum on a wetland somewhere in the Cape, and those plants, although they're the same plants, their water usage could be different. So we are aware of that, but we do have, as WaterWise, a set of guidelines that we're trying to apply, and we're working with the industry on to give us general advice as to which plants would go into which zone.
So would this also include indigenous and endemic plants? Would that also fall under that, or is that under a separate category under those eight that you're still outlining?
No. So it's all together. So indigenous plants, we've got indigenous and we've got exotic on the list. It's all about the amount of water that they require, about the amount of rainfall that they would receive and need to survive on. The endemic plants, this is where the variation comes in, because if a plant is specific to an area, the water use within that area could be very different to if you try and plant that plant somewhere else.
Okay, thank you very much.
It's all to the same thing, yeah.
So we're talking about plant design and hydrozoning. What is the next step?
The next step is to create practical turf areas. So if you're looking at grass and you're wanting to include grass within your garden, you're making sure that you're using the grass variety which uses the least amount of water. And also, when you are designing your landscape, that you don't design shapes of grass or lawn areas that are difficult to maintain with your lawnmower or with your brush cutter. You know that they are practical in terms of also your irrigation system, that you can water that patch of grass accordingly. So it talks more to design, but also being cognizant of the fact that you need to be water-wise in that planning. The next step talks to soil and soil amendment. Have you identified the type of soil that you have? Have you enriched your soil so that it's got the most amount of organic matter so that your plants can grow sufficiently? And to this end, it's mostly to do with composting and to do with mulching. Composting is a great way of making sure that you get your nutrients and your organic matter into the soil. And mulch also helps prevent evapotranspiration, and it keeps the moisture within the soil so that you're using less water on the whole.
Sorry, just a question coming through with regards to the grass. Would that exclude lawns? Are lawns no, or would that include lawns when you talk about grass?
It includes lawns, yes, yes, for sure.
Okay, so because you know lawns are the biggest guzzlers of water, and would that sort of be a determinant when planning out your garden?
Yes, for sure. So if you have got a lawn area, it would fall within your high water use zone. You see, so as you can have lawn. We're not trying to discourage anybody from having any type of plant that they want. We are trying to encourage people to rationalize their garden into segments. And if you've got a high water use area, if you've got a lawn area, that it's kept to the minimal within the overall size of the garden.
Okay, so we've gone to 1, 2, 3, 4. What are the others, Megan?
The next step is to irrigate efficiently, and that talks to the type of irrigation that you have. How are you currently irrigating your garden? And we're not saying people must have the most advanced high-tech systems, but if you are watering with a hose pipe, maybe the next step is to move to a watering can. If you are watering with a watering can, maybe it's next to move to an automated irrigation system. And when you've gotten an automated irrigation system, you need to make sure that that irrigation system is programmed correctly. So it's about understanding the type of irrigation system that you're using and optimizing that irrigation system for the watering requirements of your garden. Linked to that is the watering times, to make sure that you water your garden at the correct times. And this will vary based on the water restrictions in place throughout the country. So you must align that with what your municipality is saying in terms of watering. But ideally what we're trying to do is to make sure that you're not watering in the heat of the day when the evapotranspiration rates are the highest, because then what you put down, a lot of that will be, then be soaked up by the sun and will not actually get to your plants.
Sorry, Megan, we have, you know, lots of queries coming through with regards to when you have an automated irrigation system. Sometimes it's not regulated and you find that you may have abundance of rain and the irrigation system goes off, or it goes a bit wrong at incorrect times. And would that still, you know, encourage people to go that route, or you say they should rather start? You know, whilst we do, I know you said that we should have it automated correctly, but sometimes beyond control. What is your take on that?
Yeah, so the thing with the irrigation system is that you've got to have it linked to a rain sensor. The rain sensor will then detect when it is raining or not, and then automatically switch off your irrigation system so that it doesn't run when it's raining. So there's lots of different components that are involved with irrigation. And my suggestion is that homeowners contact accredited irrigation services professionals. Those are professionals that are affiliated with the Landscape Irrigation Association of South Africa, or they are affiliated with SAVI, which is the South African Irrigation Institute.
Thank you very much for that. And we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Let's go over the other steps.
So the next step is to make sure that you harvest your rainwater and that you reuse water. And that's also, we've spoken about a little bit. Harvesting rainwater, we see a lot of that happening in the Cape, where you've got rain tanks linked to your roof gutters so that you are collecting your rainwater. And that rainwater then is used in the garden, because that water is freely available, and then you don't need to use potable drinking water to irrigate your garden.
Okay.
Reuse of water talks to grey water, and we spoke about that earlier. That means reusing your water from your baths and your basins, and making sure that that goes into your garden instead of using potable water. So you're cutting down on the water use for gardens in particular. The seventh step is to remove alien invasive plants, because alien invasive plants challenge our local vegetation, our local plants, and they actually compete for water resources, and in the most part, they dominate our local plants in terms of water use. So we need to be aware of the different categories of alien invasive plants according to the member legislation. And if you're wanting more information on that, we do have a booklet that is available on our website, where you're welcome to contact us, and we can send copies of this off to you. So we've got the list of the alien invasive plants, and explaining also the different categories, which is category 1A, 1B, 2 and 3, and how you need to manage plants that fall into each of those categories.
Okay, that's the seventh step. There were seven steps, am I right?
One last step, which is maintenance. And that is a very important step, to make sure that you maintain your system properly and correctly. So if you are fertilizing, that you are fertilizing correctly, that you are only fertilizing small quantities of fertilizers to a plant more frequently rather than large quantities, because that encourages runoff of excess nutrients, which then has further implications downstream. If you are managing pests, are you using the correct methods of managing the pests within your garden? Making sure that you compost regularly, that you keep on topping up your mulch layers within your gardens, that you maintain the moisture within your soil, that you regularly remove weeds, that you make sure that your water feature, that you've got a water feature, isn't leaking, that your irrigation system is working efficiently, that your ponds aren't leaking if you've got ponds at home. So making sure that the maintenance of your system at home holistically is kept in check.
So so those are the eight principles that people have developed around water-wise gardening, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so it's plan and design, we talk about hydrozoning, we talk about grass, soil, irrigation, harvesting of rainwater, alien invasive plants and maintenance. Now, all of that together, so when you are planning out or when you're starting out a garden, or perhaps you're starting out for the very first time, or people who are now getting out into the gardens, these are the principles that they should adopt.
Yes, they should look at all of these, because ultimately your garden will be affected by how well you keep these elements in check.
And you mentioned something about a book that's available on the website. The title of the book and the site?
So our website is www.randwater.co.za, and then you click on the WaterWise logo.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the books that are available is the Farley and Randwater's Guide to WaterWise Landscaping.
Okay.
And the other one that is available is Understanding the Impact of Invasive Plants on Water. And yeah, that's got the list of the plants.
Now, are these books available or only on a website, or could you get hard copies of them as well?
You are more than welcome to get hard copies of those. If you would like hard copies of those, you need to just send us an email on waterwise, one word, at randwater.co.za.
Waterwise at
randwater.
randwater.co.za. And you could just mention those two books or something.
Yes, you can mention the books, and you need to give us your address, and we'll make sure that we get copies.
Thank you very much for that. I think I would, you know, try and get some for our listeners. So what I do is I'll get in touch with you, and then when we'd leave it at the radio station, people then could come and collect it. So thank you very much for that. We've got a couple of minutes, and I want to take us through some of the other aspects of water-wise gardening. Now, when we talk about water-wise gardening, we talk water-wise gardening. Could you water-wise, gardening with vegetables, trees, and take us through some of those aspects.
Yes, so water-wise gardening doesn't necessarily just apply to landscapes and ornamental gardens. It also applies to food gardening and vegetable gardening. And, in the country, we know that food security is an issue, particularly nutrition is an issue. And we are collaborating with the Agricultural Research Commission to develop a booklet specifically on vegetable gardening to guide how we, in simplistic manner, can start up vegetable gardens, and we can maintain them while at the same time also being water wise. So when we talk about vegetable gardens, you don't need to have a big patch of land to have a vegetable garden. You can even vegetable garden within containers on a patio if you are staying in a flat, or you can vegetable garden in 2-liter containers that you hang as a vertical wall. So you don't need large amounts of space. It's just about what you choose to garden and how you choose to do it.
And when you talk about weight, are there certain foods that you should plant, or does it allow anyone, any type of crop or vegetable to grow?
It all depends on the amount of space available, and certain crops are best grown at certain times of the year. So, for example, now in September, butternut, gems, pumpkin, those types of things, tomatoes, those are all good to grow at this time of year. What we need to try to remember with our vegetable gardening is that we should also group our vegetables according to their water needs, because that can also be applied to vegetables, although we know on a whole vegetables do tend to require more water, and we do understand that, but understanding also that there are also different categories of vegetables and we can also group our veggies accordingly. And then also linked to vegetable gardens, we should try to integrate our vegetables with companion plants, because that will help us to deter certain types of bugs and pests and things like that.
And, you know, well, I was going onto the site, and one of the things that caught my attention was create a water-wise garden for health. Are we talking about just eating, or are we talking about physical health as well?
Well, vegetables, like I said in the beginning, is associated with nutrition. So, for example, the Agricultural Research Commission promotes the orange flesh sweet potato, because that has got a high concentration of vitamin A, and vitamin A is particularly important in the development of children with regards to their concentration and their growth. So definitely vegetables are associated with health, yes.
And you know, last week was Arbor Week and we're in Arbor Month. Tell us something about water-wise trees. Is that a concept that could be applied to trees as well?
Well, trees, much like any other plant, can also be grouped into hydrozones. So we did different categories of trees, one-drop, two-drop, and three-drop trees, based on their watering requirements. So in terms of water-wise trees, we say any plant can be water-wise as long as it's planted within the right zone. So you do get trees that are one drop, two drop, and three drop that can be planted in high, medium, and low water use zones. But in terms of our tree of the year, we go with the department's advice. And the tree that is mostly available to us in Gauteng is the Zizipus micronata. And that is the tree of the year for this year.
Well, thank you very much for that. And last words, what else could you share with our listeners, you know, with regards to water-wise? Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
I think maybe just as an end point, you know, water conservation is something that's very personal, that we all need to become ambassadors for on an individual level. And only once we start conserving water as individuals can we make a bigger difference to our community, and then to the country, and then holistically to the planet. So we all need to start on our own as ambassadors for ourselves to start saving water.
Well, thank you very much for all that information. I'm sure people will get to the word through the, the interest, the address that you've given us, waterwise at randwater.co.za, or www.randwaterwise, and you then click on to the waterwise logo and you can download all that information.
Yes. Great, thank you.
Thank you very much, Megan. Thanks for sharing all that information. You take care. Have a wonderful, wonderful day. And it's just been fantastic having you on this program. I'm sure we'd love to have you on future programs as well. You take care. Thanks, Doc.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that was Megan Donnelly from Randwater Board, Waterwise Gardening. A fascinating subject, yes, and all of us have to be waterwise. And it does not mean that we're going to have, or we do have more rain than we had last year, that we should waste all the water. No, definitely. And I think it's our responsibility, both our Islamic responsibility as well, that we conserve water and make sure that we use it, according to our needs and not just waste it. And she's given us some wonderful ideas, both in the home and outside the home. And inshallah, we hope to implement all of that. And that's all for me until we meet again. And don't forget to visit our site and all our programs. You could get them as a podcast, and you could go on to Radio Islam's Gardening section. There's lots and lots of information there as well. That's all for me until we meet again, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.